You know, you can do cash flow. You can be an equities partner.
So what you're saying is that instead of just taking active income as a connector, it is possible for a connector to, without bringing their own capital, their own money into the deal, you can be injected into the cash flow and potentially be a partner on the deal, which would then bring you tax benefits as well. On today's episode of Nursing Real Wealth, we're joined by Shane Evans, former shop class teacher turned real estate entrepreneur. He is currently serving as a connector for real estate investors while actively expanding his own business with plans to for both wholesale and long-term buy and hold strategies. Shane's portfolio includes a three-unit property that is a mix of short-term rental, mid-term rental, and long-term rental. His unique background brings a fresh perspective to the industry, making this a conversation you won't want to miss. Shane, so glad to have you on today.
Thank you, Justin. Glad to be here. I really appreciate you taking the time to bring me on the show.
You bet. All right. Well, we'll dive right in. Can you share a little bit about your journey from being a shop class teacher to entering the real estate industry and what inspired that change?
Yeah. So growing up, my family owned multifamilies. So my father owned, a 4 or 5 unit in a town nearby, as well as the 2 unit that we lived in. When I was young, around 7 or 8 years old, I remember some mayhem and havoc happening in the house. And they basically lost that 4 unit property that was cash flowing very well. And we ended up having to sell off like the family, like, hunting cabin and like the other kind of stuff that we had that really kind of, my father didn't have the answers and my family didn't have the answers of like, hey, I can get a loan extension or a modification or this or that. Like that wasn't a thing to them. They weren't educated in that way. So that's kind of where it all kind of started. I was aware of it then. We had someone that lived upstairs who was like one of my friends when I was like 7 years old. And then they became, you know, the tenant instead of my friend kind of thing. So that was where the whole real estate started for me. My wife and I, when we got together, we went to the college in New Jersey. So we were near a college town and we decided, hey, we should look into buying something near here and renting it out because I knew that someone else paying my mortgage would be wonderful. So we ended up finding a 2-unit property in Hamilton, New Jersey, right near Princeton. And we converted that into a 3-unit. So we have a whole add-on that we moved into. And then we moved up to Vermont. I got a job as a shop teacher up here pre-COVID, or got asked to interview pre-COVID. And then I was like, oh, that job is gone. That's never going to happen. And they're like, hey, can you send us a lesson? And then this, like 2 months later. So we moved up here. We were going to look for a multifamily up here and decided it wasn't the right clientele or the right market that we wanted to be living in the same building with people. So we bought our own just single family house, which has been wonderful. And then because of that, it kind of slowed down what you know, the plans were for real estate investing. So I started building that up. We've been looking at properties near ski resorts, things like that near us for quite some time. And I came across Pace Morby's creative finance and I was like, wait a second, this is what I've been looking at doing and not knowing how to talk to people about it. And it just kind of spiraled into this rabbit hole of looking down and trying to figure out what was going on. So I gave myself a trial run in this past November of doing a wholesale deal. And I landed a deal and pulled in about 10K for like 8 hours of work. I was like, so this is real, and decided, okay, so I'm going to go full throttle. So I spent the next about 6 months prepping myself on my free time, you know, during my lunch and after work and things like that, getting up and running and putting my notice, and decided to go into this full steam.
How do you think your teaching experience influences your approach to real estate investing, if at all?
I think that's a great question. I mean, as you know, I do the Connector Zoom and the Connector Series. And so part of my MO is I like to educate people. So as soon as I was getting on the phone with sellers, I was explaining how Sub2 works or how seller finance works or how I can like make it work for them and breaking it down to terms that are a lot easier for them to understand. So for me, it was definitely a pretty easy transition. And seeing that there was a void in the community for this connector series, it's really kind of hand in hand has tied those things together. So it pretty much segued right into it. I get to connect with people on a one-to-one. And, you know, one of the things about education is I can only connect with, you know, in the place I was, I only had 16 students twice a day. So I had 32 kids and I was teaching them how to be taxpayers, right? It was literally 16-year-olds going to work while they're in my program because they were doing electrical or plumbing or HVAC, which was amazing. But I was like, wait a minute, there's more to this. You know, there's definitely a different thing that we can be doing and helping people in different ways. So that helped out a lot.
What challenges did you encounter during this transition from, you know, a stable job to this sort of unknown territory? And how did you overcome some of those challenges?
Yeah. So for me, it's always been shiny object, right? So deciding what thing to be working on or what thing not to be working on. And one of the things that I always have done is like, I'll get to 80% of a project or 90% of the project. Like, I don't have to finish that, right? Like, I know I can do it. So let me just leave that alone. So it was transitioning out of that mindset into the mindset of like, okay, no, I need to bring this to the finish line. And basically, I spent quite a bit of time going through a coaching program with Jesse Stanton, who I recommend you bring on here sometime because he's phenomenal. And basically just learning how to time block. Time blocking has been by far the number one thing that's changed the way I do things and basically how I function as a human. So that was a big hurdle, you know, finding my focus and figuring out what, you know, the who, not how.
So you work predominantly as a connector, and this is a term that I've mentioned a few times on some of my other episodes, but haven't delved into. So this is a great opportunity to really delve into what does it mean to be a connector? How the heck do you make money being a connector in real estate?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's a bunch of different ways, right? Just like any other thing people are doing, we're all connectors in some way, right? You know, whether you're connecting your friends to each other to go out on a date or you're connecting people to get together for a dinner, we all connect in that kind of way where we're organized people meeting each other. So in the real estate world, there's a lot of different functionalities where you can do that, right? You can either be a connector in like an affiliate way, right? So you can be say, hey, listen, I know this program that is really great. You should go do it. And then you get an affiliate fee for connecting those two things. That's one way to do it. Another way to do that is to, you know, you can connect people. Basically, there's a void in their business and you know another person who has an opportunity to fill that void. You can be the connector between the two and become part of that. And then there's just a couple other ways. It's really just about solving people's problems. And it's kind of the lifeblood of what we all do, right? We solve problems. If you're a wholesaler, you're a connector in reality. It's just you're connecting buyers and sellers instead of connecting, you know, real estate investor to real estate investor. So, you know, the way I look at it is people want to have that access to things, but people don't have time to find those things, right? So there's so many pieces of the puzzle that we need to really use our time wisely. So as a connector, if I've already got connections with 25 different private money lenders or 25 different gators or 25 different buyers, I can now go ahead and combine those together and say, okay, oh, you need someone for this and you need someone for that. Great. I've got the right person for that. And then basically I can either take a fee from that or I can become part of the deal where I get a percentage of the deal. So there's so many ways to structure it that it's just like any negotiation with a JV or a partnership. There's really no one way to do it. You know, my father always used to say, there's more than one way to skin a cat, you know, as horrible as that sounds, right? But like, it's true. There's so many different opportunities and so many different ways to do things that, you know, whenever someone asks me, like, how do you become a connector? It's like, well, you've got to buckle down and learn how to actually focus on what you're doing.
You mentioned this connector series Zooms, which I've been on and they've been great. But could you elaborate a little bit on what this is and how these connector series Zooms might contribute to someone's business growth?
Yeah. So we have a weekly Zoom every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Myself, Jesse Stanton, and Chanel Stolden. The three of us are kind of at three different levels of our real estate career. Jesse is, you know, is strictly buy and hold, and he's a coach for business coach to help people grow their business and their personal growth. And he has done been connecting for however many years. And so he's that one part. I'm in the middle somewhere where I've got some real estate experience, but not at that level, but I'm not a novice either. So I come in and I bring my mindset of what I've been doing. And then we have Chanel, who's just started about a month and a half ago, full throttle into this. And she's bringing the new fresh face where she's like, everything's brand new and everything's like, I'm learning this. This is the great thing. And like all the people that we're teaching, it's this new thing that comes in and just like, she's like, it's not as having these three levels, I feel really shows a lot of different aspects instead of just one like person up on a pedestal. You've got this dynamic that really adds to the structure of what we're trying to do. And so the series is essentially where teaching people what to do to be a connector, right? Everyone says they're a connector and then they're also a gator and then they're also a buyer and they're also a wholesaler and they're DTS, they're DTA. Oh, but sometimes I do driving for dollars and sometimes I do this, right? And the connector always gets just slapped on to everyone's avatar, right? Because we all are. But if you wanted to just focus on that, like you can legit just have a job being a connector. So we're teaching people how to do that. So, you know, when it comes down to, you know, how are you spending your time each day? How are you actually focusing your efforts on, you know, what are you using your time for? How to set up your Calendly, you know, the bare basics we started with, how to set up your Calendly, how to really figure out how to time block. That was one of the big ones that we spent a lot of time on, learning how to time block and using your time wisely. And then kind of going down the line and just learning about the contracts at some point. And we're making our way down the list. So it's really just an all-inclusive like business walkthrough of what you should be doing if this is what you want to be focusing on.
So basically, a connector is somebody who is learning a little bit about a lot of different aspects of real estate, but mainly leveraging their social network within the realm of real estate investing and seeking to offer value between this person who needs this service and this person who offers that service, or vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Is that a good summary of it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I kind of want to briefly talk about like people ask like, well, are you going to charge me for connecting me to like the person who knows how to do probate? And it's like, well, no, because that's not a thing. Like you can go search the internet and find that. But if I know a person, I'm going to connect you, right? So there's the pro bono, right, which is where you're just being a good person. And then there's the side of it where like, hey, you're not going to be able to get this deal done without this piece. I want to be part of this deal. Let me go get that piece for you and bring that to you because I already have access because I've spent, you know, the past 3 months building up relationships with people. Now I've got a relationship with 25 PMLs and I can say, hey, who wants to be in on this deal? And then I can go to that buyer and say, hey, I've got three people who are ready to pull the trigger. How can we make this work so that I get paid, you get paid, and we make this deal happen?
So it's not really just like some guy randomly DMs you one day and it's like, I need this service. Any idea? It's about relationship building, yes. Correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
So I think that's one of the things I see some people trying to function as a connector. They got a random person who DM'd yesterday. They don't really have a relationship with them. They're like, I need private money. Oh, yeah, I've got private money lenders. And, you know, I think, you know, it's important to recognize that there's a relationship that needs to be built on both ends, right? So a connector has a little bit of a responsibility to have had some time spent with that person, understand them a little bit, and make sure that there's a little tiny bit of vetting that has happened to make sure this person's the real deal, right? They've got some character, some integrity, and you're bringing that person who appears to have some character and integrity with another person who's got character and integrity in their work.
Yeah, no, and I love how you kind of put those two together because, right, if I'm connecting money, right, because it's an easy thing to talk about, like there's so many things we can connect together. But if I'm going to connect just money, let's say I've got a PML that I've built this rapport with that I would like to probably use for deals at some point one day, right, because now I've got access to that person. But in the meantime, until I have a deal, why not connect them to a buyer? But I'm not just going to go, you know, Justin, you and I have built a relationship where we've been talking back and forth. Like, you know, I don't know a great deal about your business, but I know you as a person. And I know like how you are and how you interact and how you do things. And that's what that relationship is, right? Like, I'm not just going to connect with the first person who says, hey, I need this. It's like, oh yeah, I got that. Like, that's a broker of stuff. That's not really a connector, as you put it really well by saying both sides of the connection needs to have a relationship.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I just interviewed Melissa Palmer on a, on an episode, and she shared on her Instagram that, you know, when we're doing connections, she said what she sees a lot of is we got people trying to make a marriage from a DM.
Yes.
You know, and she's like, we would never do that in real life, right? We would never try to make and force a marriage or arrange a marriage as a connector from no dating. She's like, why would we do that? We want to make sure that we've had time to develop a relationship. Real estate is a relational business, you know, and if you're not developing relationships, you're injecting high amounts of risk into what is already a risky industry. So you want to make sure you've got great relationships with people, and you're just bringing that value then together rather than value over here and unknown over here.
I love that. Yeah. I really love that. And, like the first deal that I landed on, I had someone, Lance Riggin, he's the one that connected the two of us, and I knew Lance, you know, and Lance was like, yeah, I've done stuff with these guys before. They're good people. Like Lance and I have a good relationship. So I'm like, okay. Like, and the other thing is Lance is a connector, even though he's a gator, he's still a connector. And in a very, very high level way, because he's saying, okay, this is the structure that I'm going to get you the money for. And hey, you want the money? Here's the structure I'm going to pay you for or get you paid for. And in the middle, he's like, I get my, a number in the front and a number at the end. So I've also got risk in the deal. So it's really cool how he structures his deals.
Yeah, that's an important point. Actually, I like that he structures his deals that way. I've heard some concern from private money lenders where the full dollar amount for a connector is on the front end out of the debt that the borrower has borrowed.
Yes.
And that's a little sketchy because as a connector, you're going and connecting two people together and you're taking the risk of that deal completely out of it for you, which means if the deal goes south, you got paid as the connector, the private money lender lost their pants. Mm-hmm. And the borrower is in bad situation, and you may or may not know that went down. And I can tell you that private money lender is going to be real hesitant to use you as a connector down the road if you walked away with money and they walked away with a loss of their life savings. Yeah. So very, very important to make sure that things are structured in a way that is putting you as a connector, I think, in the risk pool too.
Yeah.
So that you're bearing that weight with that person you brought on board.
Yeah. And I like that because, you know, when people are like, well, you want to be part of my deal, you know, you're just connecting the two of us and you want to be part of my deal. I'm like, yeah, like I'm willing to risk connecting you to this person that I built this relationship with. And I want to be part of your deal because I want a relationship with you as well. And it's very interesting to see how some people react to that, right? Well, like, why do you get to be part of this deal? It's like, well, do you have access to the money? You know, like you don't. So like if I don't have to get paid full out right now, give me an equity stake in this. Like there's so many ways to structure it to make it work, right? Hey, you can't pay me, you can't pay me $3,500 up front, but could you give me a, 5% interest in the whole property? And then, over time it's gonna be more than $3,500. But at the same time, it's like, hey, you didn't have to pay for that. You don't have to pay out of pocket. And that's a really cool way to structure deals. Like just like anything sub two or seller finance, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk just a smidge more about that. I know it's a little off script from what we were thinking, but I love that. You open up a whole nother plethora of ideas, but what I've seen is a lot of connectors do just a connector fee and that's about it. That's been my exposure, but I know there's a lot of opportunity to potentially get injected into a deal like you mentioned. So what are some of, maybe you could itemize a couple of different ways that either you have structured it or you've watched others that are mentors to you structure deals. Maybe you haven't explored structuring a deal that way, but you know it's possible to do it in a given situation.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a great way to put it. So, like, I like to think about, when we talk about a seller finance deal or a creative deal, like, how many different ways can that be done? Right. I mean, there's different ways that are coming up all the time because people are getting super creative. Like, hey, listen, I need to hold onto this property for X amount of time before I can start giving you money because it doesn't cash flow until 6 months in. Can you hold payments for 6 months? Right. There's so many options for that. why can't there be options for this, right? Like, hey, listen, I would love to take, you know, I know people who are private money capital and capital raisers who are taking like 8%, and it's, I'm like, holy crap, you know, that's a huge number. And then that's, and then there's still a 12 or 15% PML that goes with that. So like, but they're bringing big amounts of money. So, but like as a structure, right, you've got the option of like I was saying with Lance does front and back end, right? But he also could have injected himself into the equity stake of that property, right? Say, let's say it's a fix and flip for, you know, we're doing 30 days or 90 days, whatever. You know, you can go ahead and say, hey, I'd like X percent of this deal. I won't take a connector fee up front, but I want X percent. That way I get paid on the back end when you refi out. And then I stay in as cash flow partner or whatever it might be. So, you know, you can do cash flow. You can be part of the cash flow. If the structure of the deal is good enough there that you think you're going to make sure you get paid out, you can be an equities partner in this in some small capacity, JV equity partner. You could say, hey, for the first year, I want to be able to collect X amount of the cash flow. Or I want nothing until you refi out or you sell the property, right? So there's just like so much potential to just come up with stuff that makes it work for the buyer or the lender, whoever you're making the deal with. There was one that I just popped up, but I forget what I was going to say, but there's just so many opportunities to just make it work for the buyer, make it work for the lender, and everyone wins.
So what you're saying is that instead of just taking active income as a connector, it is possible for a connector to, without bringing their own capital, their own money into the deal, they could bring another person's capital to the deal. That makes that person who brought their capital to the deal money. And it brings it to a person who needs the capital for a deal to make money. And you can be injected into the cash flow and potentially be a partner on the deal, which would then bring you tax benefits as well.
Yes, exactly. So
there we go.
Yeah, so it's like the work, we're all going to have to find private money, right? So that's kind of how I look at it too. Like we all need to find that. If I have access to it, I have nothing to do with it, I might as well put it to work, right? Just like the money sitting in your bank, you might as well put that to work, help someone move their money, do something with it. But also now instead of that, let's say you have a private money partner, right? Someone comes in, they're going to stay in until a refi at 5 years or until a sale at 5 years. Why not say, hey, listen, instead of you getting, or instead of that private money lender getting, or 50%, right? Now the person borrowing the money is going to get 45 and I can get 5, or even, you know, I bring all the money and it's just through me, right? So I look at it too, is at a higher level. You know, there's what we're talking about. And at a higher level, it's like, I can do all that in-house, right? Now I can say, this money is mine. It's my white labeled money. And I'm lending it to you and I'm getting this percentage. And I'm making sure that I'm making my lender whole, right? So there's so many, like it's at a higher level than what we're talking about here. There's just a whole structure that you can create within your business to become the I don't know, puppet master is not the right way, but the hub of a wheel. Right now, everything comes to your business. You're the hub and you kind of funnel it back out to where it needs to go.
Earlier, you mentioned the concept of mindset. And I know mindset is one of these things where I think people balk at it a little bit because it does. There are some people that get really hokey with mindset and there's some really weird stuff out there. But it is true. There's something really important about mindset because we're shifting from, you know, like if you're poor or middle class, you really do think a certain way about your finances. You think about how money flows in a certain way. I know I did. Yeah. And I'm shifting that right now. And when you think about, you know, when you're starting to move into an area of affluence, you need to think very differently about how money flows, what opportunities are available, and then how dedicated you need to be to actually see that through. So I would love to hear a little bit more about your mindset as a real estate entrepreneur, how it impacts your decisions and actions.
Yeah. And thank you for bringing that up. Cause that's one of the biggest things in my life, you know, since it should be the biggest thing in most people's life, you know, like the way you think is the way that you're going to live your life. Right. So, through the coaching program that I mentioned, the Growth Co, there's been a lot of different, learning experiences and a lot of different books to read and different things like that. So I've really gone down the rabbit hole in that. So yes, there is the hokey side of it, like you said, or the woo-woo, right? And it's amazing if you really like look at how like the way that people are saying, like the really far end of the spectrum that you're talking about, like really hokey. We don't really know, right? There's something there, but we don't know. Like, you know, people, if you watch on YouTube, people talk about like, you know, a thought is electrons and electrical activity, and there's energy, and then the energy goes out into the universe and the universe brings it back. And like, so that is true, right? Like, there is something to that to an extent, right? It's like, it's the same thing with like, you're looking for a car because you're going to buy a new car and now you see it everywhere, right? It just changes the way you think and the way you look at stuff, and it brings it back full throttle. So there's a book that I'm reading, in the middle of reading right now, Napoleon Hill. And it's, have you read this one?
Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah. Think and Grow Rich.
Yep.
Super like on the fence of like woo woo, where you're just like, really, dude? Like, are you saying that I can just meditate in the morning and think about this thing and it'll just happen? It's like, yes, but no, right? Like there's,
right.
Yes, if you change the way you think, your actions are going to start changing. And if your actions yes. start changing, then obviously you're going to get to where you need to be. And the one thing that he talks about is, you know, think of your goal, your ultimate goal, and, you know, shoot for that absurd number of money or absurd thing that you're trying to get to. And just say, no, I have that now. I have the ability to do that now. You know, because in 10 years, who's that person you want to be? Who's the person you want to be in 10 years? You know, you're not going to just build up to being that person by going a little bit. You're going to be like, no, I'm going to start acting like that person. So you're going to change who you are. And that mindset shift is, you're going to be a different person completely. Like literally from August until now, I'm a whole different person going through a coaching program, because now I realize if I want something I've never had, I have to start doing things I've never done.
Yeah.
So mindset is just, you know, there's two things to that. So like there's mindset, right? Where you can push yourself forward and read books and things like that. And then there's also things like therapy, right? Even though like it's been frowned upon for the past, you know, 30 years and generations, right? Now it's not as weird, right? I go to therapy on a weekly basis because there are things that I haven't dealt with since I was 2 or 4 years old, that I built up these, you know, defense mechanisms, and they come up every time I get nervous or every time I get upset. And you don't know why until you go back and realize, oh, I can just look at that from a different point of view and go, that's a different mindset change. Like I could be acting upon this, or I can look at it and go, no, I'm choosing to act upon it a certain way. So yeah, mindset is huge. It's just in all realms.
I was just going to tag on to that. As a nurse, I've worked as a nurse for 13 years, and getting into leadership, you know, there's a lot of strange leadership books out there that are just nonsense, frankly. And I will, sorry to my employers, the hospital provided many hokey books that were just weird. But I will say one of the books that really stood out to me was one on emotional intelligence. Super, super helpful book. And of all the things that they taught, that one was really excellent, because it taught you to be aware of your triggers. It taught you to be aware specifically in terms of managing teams, right? So what triggers you into anger? You need to know that so that you don't act upon it.
Yes.
So that when the trigger hits, you have already pre-checked it in yourself, and you're capable of going and putting the brakes on to your emotional default response and responding to the intelligent, I know I need to respond this way instead, which will foster a better relationship and make sure that I grab more details before I act on something without all of the details. So there's elements of that that certainly come into play, even with real estate. You're going to need to know what triggers your fear, because real estate can trigger fear. Yeah, you start to get too close to going and, you know, putting that check out for a large amount of your life savings into a deal, because there's the potential for a good gain, but there's the potential for a loss. There's a lot of fear that can you know, hit you. And so you have to be able to go and check that and make sure that instead of acting only on emotion and fear, you're acting based on the evidence, the due diligence, all of the work you've done to go and make sure that this is a good deal, and background checks, whatever you're doing to go and make sure that that's an excellent choice that you're making. So yeah, I think it's really important.
Yeah, I love that. I just want to add one more thing on like something that really changed my mindset. There's another book called The Gap and the Gain. And it's they came out with another book. I think it's 10X is easier than 2X. But The Gap and the Gain, the mindset behind it is, you know, we've got these three different points in our psyche, right? Or in our goal setting. You've got the ideal self, where you want to be. You've got where you currently are. And then you've got where you used to be or where you were at one point. And so we always, as entrepreneurs and as people, because this is how we've been trained, we always look at the gap between where we should be or we think we should be and where we are. And instead, we should be looking, instead of looking forward at that gap, because that's a negative emotion, right? Oh, I'm not there yet. Oh, I haven't gotten there yet. You look backwards and you say, look at where I've gotten, right? So I was here. Now, where am I here? Right? Like 3 months ago, I was a different person than I am today. And I look back, and when I get overwhelmed, I kind of take a step back and go, no, I did a lot of good stuff, you know? And so writing down your wins every single day at night, that's a huge, huge, huge thing. You know, writing down three big wins of the day, is just fantastic for mindset and helping you move forward.
Let me ask you this. Can you provide some examples of successful deals or partnerships you've been able to do since joining Sub 2 and going on this journey with the growth company? Obviously, you quit your job, so there's been, you know, some great opportunities that have come across your table. Maybe just share some of those wins with our listeners.
Yeah, so I'll start out with the Connectors series, right? The Network to Net Worth group that we have on Facebook. That right there was out of opportunity, right? So I was reaching out to the connectors that I wanted to connect with to see how we can do deals together, essentially. Like I knew that connectors have access to the people that I want to talk to. And I was like, okay, well, let's talk. Let's see how we can do this. And I'm a natural connector in my own sense. Whether I was controlling that in the right way and structuring it in the right way, that's a different story. But so I reached out and I basically had such high responses. I literally had 75 to 80 people saying, hey, I'm interested. I'd like to be part, you know, I want to get paid, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, okay. I can't have calls with 75 people in the timeline that I want to have calls with. So let's do a Zoom. So I basically came back to my, my Growth Crow group with Jesse and my partner. I was like, hey, look, I'm going to start doing this because there's just no time to do all this. And Jesse was like, oh, me and Chanel are doing the same thing. Why don't we just link up? And so that was an opportunity that we linked up. And it, you know, we haven't really monetized on that because right now we're providing a service. Like it turned into like, hey, let me teach you a little bit about how I'm connecting and making some money. And also I want to get you paid. So let me get access to you as well. So you can kind of bring me deals when necessary. And we turn it into this whole thing where we're just providing value. And I think from what I've seen and the reason why I joined the community is because of the value that people provide, right? Because of the amount of I wouldn't say selflessness, because that's not exactly the right word, right? We all are here for a reason. We're all here to make money. We all want to make sure we make money, but also the willingness to be valuable to others is the great thing about the Sub 2 community that I just pushed me over the edge of, like, if I was going to start wholesaling, it wasn't going to be the shady dude who's like, I'll give you 10 cents on the dollar, you know, and like freak, you know, doing shady stuff. And I'm like, that's not me. I don't want to ruin someone's livelihood. So that's one thing. And I wouldn't call it a deal, but I would call it a relationship that has built with hundreds of people. We've got 200 and something people in the group right now after a couple weeks. And we've got maxed out Zooms, and that's been fantastic. Other deals, I mean, I've had people just reach out and have had dispo deals for them. I'm in Vermont. So right on the New Hampshire border. So people have called up and said, hey, I've got this deal under contract. Do you have any buyers? Because Vermont is this anomaly, right? Like we were just kind of this thing in the middle of nowhere in Northeast. And my partner and I are pretty much the only ones doing wholesale deals in the state that we know of. Everyone else is like, wait, what do you mean? What's creative? And we were able to wholesale some great deals up here. So I would say just through that and through the, we've got our Discord. What's on the Discord? The, accountability groups in Discord, within that, you know, just networking with people there and helping out with deals that they're doing and just talking through some stuff. Those are the two biggest things that I've, deal wise that we've done with other people.
Nice. And when you're talking about the accountability group, are you talking about the elephant challenge that Pace Morby puts on?
No. So this is, so within Sub 2, everyone has an accountability group based on state. The Northeast is such a weird bubble that we're kind of so spread out. We've got about, I think, 6 states in one accountability group. So it's similar to the elephant challenge, but this one is specific for Sub 2.
What are your long-term goals in real estate? And how do you plan to achieve them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm going to put this on record because I haven't really put it out there because my long-term goals are pretty lofty, right? So, and I look at real estate because I do enjoy the process, but I also look at it as a ways to be passively, you know, to have passive income, right? So, you know, I want to get to a point where I don't have to really worry. I want to actually create a business that has enough delegation that I am not in the trenches, right? So that's part one. You know, there's a lot of people who want to be in this and want to be in the trenches all the time. I want to be standing off and be more of a CEO position at some point. I won't be there for a little while, but I'm going to get there. So my goal is, you know, and Napoleon Hill told me to say it a certain way and to meditate and go on that. My goal is to hit $100 million, be worth $100 million. Basically have that opportunity to take that money and apply it to what I'm really passionate about, which is outdoor education, adventure education, and like permaculture type stuff. So that's where I want to be in this. I want to be able to have, you know, a few million dollars in passive income every year so that I'm not having to think about that. And I want to be able to build up my family's legacy in a way that's, still allows my child or and grandkids and kids to have to work for their money, right? And have to build their own thing. But it's really about building a legacy for my family. But yeah, my goals are to have enough passive stuff to do all that.
I think you and I are on the same page there. Similarly, my goal is to get to a point where, you know, I have a similar affluence in my net worth and have most of my income coming in passively because I have so many other passions that working the full-time job don't afford me the opportunity to do. And so that's the chief end of getting involved in real estate is to get to a point where eventually I've put in some systems and I've got some employees who are doing a lot of the legwork of running the show, while I can kind of oversee that and then spend a little bit more of my time, hopefully my money, and things that add value to society in many different ways. So,
yeah.
But yeah, excellent. Yeah. You mentioned plans to do, sorry, what was that?
I was going to say really quick, what are some of those things that you want to, how do you want to add value to the world?
Sure. Well, I love writing music and that does not provide much of an income. So I love writing music. I did a film about almost a decade ago, did one movie, it's out on Amazon Prime. And a short independent film. It's called The Wednesday Morning Breakfast Club. You can look it up.
I will.
Don't expect too much because remember, it was a decade ago. So we made it on a shoestring budget, but it was fun. Hey, I will say it was the first financial success in regard to business. We did a 431% return on investment on that one.
Nice.
So not too bad. Not too bad.
Not bad at all.
But, yeah. But anyway. That's something I would love to be able to do. Those are areas that do not make great money unless you really get deeply into them. And in order to explore them, you really need to have a lot of time. So down the road, that'd be great. The other thing that we're desiring to be able to do is we'd like to get to a point where we're affluent enough to have a foundation and we can go and have our money working charitably for other things. My wife is from the Philippines and there's a need for good quality orphanages. These kids are living in usually squalor, even in an orphanage. And it's just, there's just not great, great resources for kids. And so her desire would be to be able to come back to the Philippines at some point and build some nice facilities to house these children, that are in need of shelter in the Philippines. So down the road, hopefully sooner than later.
Yeah. Definitely set those timelines, right? Cause that's what's going to get you there, right? Don't keep thinking down the road. Think by this day.
Yes. I have a few other goals that are prior to that, but yes, hopefully we'll achieve those, soon.
Nice.
I want to do my first PML deal before the end of this year.
Perfect. Cool. Call Lance. Yep.
Yeah. Right. all righty. And then, so you mentioned plans for wholesaling, buy and hold. How do you balance these strategies? And, you know, what do you look for in potential wholesale deals?
So, so right now the wholesale is to make sure I have a salary, right? Because I can do buy and hold, but until I actually get something that cash flows wonderfully, and the system's in place for that, it's hard to get it up to that point, right? So, so we're building up our war chest a little bit so that we can start doing a couple more things. At some point, we'll do some fix and flips once the market stabilizes a little more and things like that. But as for buy and holds, you know, that's a tough one, because when you're first getting into this, you want to be comfortable with your market, and being so far away from something and not in control of that while doing a million other things, it's so difficult. So I'm in Vermont, and you know, it's a blue state, and it definitely, you know, there's wonderful things that happen because of that. And there's also things that as a landlord, you can't evict anyone, right? So there's balance. So we're trying to find that balance point of like, okay, if we're going to do something here, it's going to have to be short-term rentals or mid-term rentals, because it's very difficult to manage that. And so we are looking outside of this realm a little bit, and you know, finding our buy box is going to be our key thing. And in order to get to the buying side of things, it's PML. So, you know, if you're looking to your first PML deal, let's talk, because I'm looking for some cash as well. So I want to make sure that it works for everyone. But the balance is, let's get the structure going for the wholesale so that there's steady income, and then let's start doing buy and holds. And one of the things I love about the real estate is making sure you pay yourself, right? Like if I have a PML and it's a good deal, I can still pay myself an assignment fee as if I was wholesaling it. And then I can hold on to that property at the same time. So it's like, it's a win-win as long as but the real, in all honesty, that's why I'm doing the connector, is because getting access to money is the biggest thing, right? It's capital. If you have access to OPM, other people's money, you've got an open-ended opportunity.
Are there any specific challenges or opportunities you anticipate on your real estate journey kind of moving forward?
Yes. The biggest one that I see, like, is when you're partnering people. I have never managed a company in a way that's like, okay, I got to hire and fire and things like that. So I've had students. I can't fire my students. I've never been able to. I've tried many times to get them out. This doesn't work. So that's going to be definitely a transition for myself. And I think that's going to be my biggest hurdle. And also letting go, you know, letting go of pieces of the business. As a visionary, I want to do everything. And I want to do the fun stuff. But at the same time, that's not really my job, right? It's not my job to puppet master other people. And that's the other part. Like, I have to be able to bring on someone like an integrator who can manage the other side of the business while I'm going out there and doing what I do best. So that's going to be the biggest hurdle in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Scaling and adding people to the picture.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not taking too many shiny objects.
Yes. Yes. True story. My goodness. Shiny object syndrome is a real thing. It's very hard to go in, like, especially when you join a community like Sub2, because there's like a million different strategies. Even Gator, you get exposed to a lot of that. I'm in Gator. I'm not in Sub2 yet, but you get exposed to all of these different ideas, and you're like, oh, that's really neat. And I think I could do that, and I would actually really enjoy that, but I'm not maybe I'm not quite ready for that yet. I'm almost, but not quite.
Yes.
You know, and so you just have to be able to hone in on that. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
Real thing. last question would be, can you offer advice or insight to individuals who are looking to make sort of a similar transition into real estate entrepreneurship, especially those maybe who, you know, with your background, teaching background, what kind of advice would you give to them? And would you always advise people to quit their day job? I know Melissa Palmer last episode, she did a fantastic job of saying, if you don't hate your W-2 and it's not toxic, leverage it.
Yes.
Don't get rid of it.
Right.
Use it to your advantage. Obviously, if it's toxic, then it may be time to be able, you know, to look for something else. But yeah, take it away.
Yeah. So, all right, let's say you're a teacher. The one thing that was to my advantage was, I mean, there's a lot of things actually. You know, I had healthcare. I had, you know, I had a paycheck. And through the summer, right? I have summers off. So I was able to go full throttle into this for an entire summer while still getting a paycheck throughout the summer because I was able to stretch that out throughout the year. And I had health insurance until the end of August. So for me, I knew that while I was tiptoeing in this mess of trying to figure stuff out, you know, I was doing it for 6 months prior and learning. And I knew that I knew if I can go full throttle into it, that I can put enough effort and enough energy into building this out that I would be successful. And it's really about believing in yourself, right? And that's the whole mindset thing is like, are you going to put all your cards out on the table, all your chips out, right? And invest in you. And that's what I chose to do. I chose to invest in the coaching program to make sure that I was not going to flounder and keep squirreling and shiny objecting and all this other stuff. So yeah, I mean, if you have an opportunity like I did where you can put two good months straight in doing it and try it out, right? Cause you don't really have to put in your notice. You're going to burn some bridges, but you don't have to, you can try this for 2 months and then at the end of it and say, yeah, this is great. And then put in your notice 2 weeks before school starts. It's terrible, but like you could do it, you know, you're going to burn a lot of bridges. It depends on where you're going to stay, but I don't plan to stay in that community, let's say, right? But for me, I was in a school that was very small and I put in my notice in April because I'm like, I'm just doing this. I'm doing it. I still have my certificate. I can always go back to teaching. There's always a demand for what I do specifically. And that's the tech ed world. So my biggest thing is go all in if you can, or if you feel like this is your calling or you feel like this is the right choice for you. It's not for everyone, right? Because I sit in my basement all day and I'm on my computer for 8 hours a day. I'm not out there running around, traveling to houses and checking them out and working on them. Like I'm literally here connecting with people for now. You know, at some point I will be traveling. I will be using that travel to vacation. But if you want something you've never had, you have to do something you've never done, right? That whole phrase. But yeah, the W-2 leveraging, I know people who make, you know, I wasn't making 100 plus. I wasn't making 150. I mean, you as a nurse, I'm sure make pretty good money. Can you live your lifestyle in that way and still do this full time if you quit your job right now, right? That's what you have to decide on. Can you pull back your hours? Can you, I don't know what your schedule is. Do you do 4/12s or 3/12s?
I'm actually, I'm an 8-hour, I'm a salaried. So I work, 8 to 4:30.
Okay.
So I have evenings available every evening, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And like some other people as a nurse might have the, you know, they might do 3/12s, right?
Do 3/12s, exactly, yep.
Mm-hmm. Days to do this.
You got multiple days to go and do it. Yes, it's actually a great opportunity, I think, for nurses to look at because, you know, you got, you know, the majority of the week is available to most nurses to be looking at deals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it really depends on your situation, but if you can sock some money away in the interim and plan out to give yourself a few months of leeway and you know, do proof of concept or not, or just believe in yourself, just go all in if that's what you want, or just dabble in it. Or I know people who are unbelievably successful. They work a full-time job still, and they still do this on the side because they just love it and they're really good at it. You know, so.
Yeah. In conclusion, I just want to extend my heartfelt appreciation to Shane Evans for generously sharing his unique journey and valuable insights on today's episode of Nursing Real Wealth. Shane's transformation from a shop class teacher to a thriving real estate entrepreneur is a testament to the boundless opportunities that await those who are ready to explore new horizons. So Shane's experience and unique perspective serve as a reminder that regardless of your background, the world of real estate does offer a multitude of avenues for financial growth and success. His journey serves as a compelling example of how determination, adaptability, and willingness to learn can lead to remarkable achievements in this dynamic industry. To our listeners, we hope that Shane's story has ignited your own entrepreneurial spirit and encouraged you to consider the diverse possibilities within real estate. As you navigate your own path to financial well-being and prosperity, remember that every journey is unique and your decisions and actions will shape your success. Thank you for being a part of this episode, and we look forward to having you join us for more enlightening conversation on Nursing Real Wealth. Stay inspired and keep working towards your financial goals.